You can see my award-winning climate comedy show Spoilers at a festival near you, provided you live near or are going to McCunclith or Wells comedy festivals. More dates added soon near you, conceivably, who knows what might happen.
And if you are at Mac, come and see ComCom Redacted live at 4 p.m. on the Saturday.
Go to stuartgoldsmith.com and click the very attractive banner image to find out more.
Welcome to Sincerely Sloan, presented by Uninterrupted. I'm your host, professional tennis player, wife, parent, and entrepreneur, Sloan Stephens. As an athlete and as a person, my journey has had a lot of twists and turns, from moments of adversity and doubt to unimaginable triumph and satisfaction. Throughout the season, I'm joined by some of the biggest names in sports, entertainment, culture, and a few members of my tribe. Our conversations keep it real and push it past skin deep. We reveal the perspectives, routines, and products that allow each of us to show up at our best. Join me on my journey of self-discovery and many, many laughs along the way. Sincerely, Sloan.
This is a podcast from ComediansComedian.com.
This is the Comedian's Comedian Podcast. Hello, welcome to the show. I'm Stuart Goldsmith, and here we are with part two of my conversation with Ross Noble. And you join us as we're talking about ideas and how Ross uses logic as a jumping-off point for his signature flights of fancy. This is Ross Noble. I want to talk about the assemblage of the show, and I wanted to sort of get into that stuff. Before we get onto that, I wanted to ask about your relationship to your audience and how your audience has developed, because you have like a really loyal crowd of people that come and see you that you've built up over years.
Yeah.
So when did you first get a sense that you were starting to develop a following?
Well, it was before I did Edinburgh. It was probably around the sort of, probably 96, 97, around that sort of time where, I was gigging on the circuit, but I was doing quite a lot of regular comparing at places, and then people would come back. There'd be regulars at the show every week, and so it was one of those things where I started building up these pockets of places around the country where I was like regularly comparing, and I would see the same faces coming back time and time again. So what I did was, and at the time, like everyone does it now, but at the time it was unheard of, you know, that like Eddie had done. Eddie Izzard had gone out and toured before he was on telly, and that was the other thing, like me going, oh, I'm not doing telly, you know, similar to Eddie, that thing of people going, oh, it's a strategy, and you go, it's not strategy, it's not a thing, it's just a, he'd gone out and done all these small gigs, but done them as a tour, and so what I did was I just realised that I was going back to the same clubs all the time, and I was seeing the same faces in the audience, so I thought, well, I'll go to those clubs, but I'll do it on a night where there isn't a gig on. So if the club ran on a Friday and a Saturday, I'd come on a Sunday and go and do the whole show.
Yeah.
And I'd just say, and at first it was like, they couldn't do like Edinburgh previews, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd just say to the crowd, you know, I'd play there and say, right, I'm going to be back in a month's time and it's just going to be me. If you want to come along, bring your friends, whatever. And then I'd do that. And then 6 months later, I'd do it again, and then I'd get 50 people or 100 people, and then a year later, I came back and I said, right, well, I'm going to do it again, and then there was this exponential growth of just, as those people then told their friends, and there was then I started doing Edinburgh at the same time, and because of the buzz that I was getting, the press buzz that I was getting off Edinburgh, I was using that, you know, the sort of the reviews and the sort of buzz that was the sort of interest that was coming from Edinburgh, I used that as a way of publicising it, you know, using the sort of local press and just going, oh, this thing's happening. And then I'd go back, and then I'd have, you know, I'd have 100 people, then the next year there'd be 200 people, and then, you know, 400, and then 800, and it just happened like that, and it just, I just kept coming back. And again, like, at the time, there wasn't a, you know, there was like a handful of us that were, by the time I got, then I did the West End, you know, booked a West End theatre, did a couple of weeks, and then came back the next year and did 4 weeks, and then came back again, and then all of a sudden, as soon as it was in the West End, people were going, well, hang on, here's this kid who's not on telly, mm-hmm, playing the West End. And then so, like, then the sort of you know, the sort of Sunday papers would sort of write stuff about me, and it just became this thing where you had people who were sort of seeing me in clubs and telling their mates, and then there was also people that were sort of, you know, would read the sort of Sunday Times and go, oh, this fella seems to be, yeah, he's in the West End.
Successful and yet not, yeah, known. Yeah, it's very intriguing,
yeah,
isn't it?
And it became this sort of thing, yeah, you know, and I would do sort of, but it was relentless. It was literally that thing of, but then at the same time, I was going to Edinburgh, and then as soon as I sort of got into the clubs, then I made the leap into small theatres, art centre, and then into, you know, like the big theatres, which is what I'd always wanted. That was the ultimate, you know, that was the sort of the ultimate goal. And then, yeah, just do that. And then, you know, I'd sort of play, and then I'd do 2 nights and then 3 nights or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then it just got to the point where,
Was that decision to stick with the live shows and you know, those decisions, those early decisions about, like, right, I'm gigging here, so I'll come back in a month. Hey, everyone, bring your friends.
Yeah.
Was that motivated purely by yourself? Did you have management? Was anyone kind of going, right, Ross, what we need to do is this? Or was this you going, I'm on my own, this is what I've decided?
That's what I wanted to do. And then, luckily, I had a manager who liked the cash. So...
Where can we find one of them?
but you know, it was you know, like, my manager at the time was you know, he sort of you know, he could sort of see the value in you know, going down that route, because obviously it ultimately, you know the idea of it growing, you know.
So there wasn't the pressure on you that maybe an act in a similar situation now might have a kind of certain pressure to get on TV.
No, not at all. Not at all. But also that pressure didn't exist, because the only shows that, you know, you could do Des O'Connor.
Des O'Connor. It's not like there was a load of things ready to package you.
There was the stand-up show. But, you know, it was the sort of thing where, you know, I'd started doing... Well, is it? I did sort of like Johnny Vaughan had a chat show, and then I did Jonathan Ross. That was the other thing, because I'd been the warm up for Jonathan Ross. I then got on Jonathan Ross's chat show when he was on BBC One, and that was like. But I just wasn't. I didn't have a TV show. I didn't have But it was one of those things where, you know, Jonathan had me on his chat show, and he just went, you know, here's this bloke who I think is really funny. And then, you know, and then I started doing, I did all the things that I wanted to do, basically. I did, you know, I'd do chat shows, and I would do, I started doing Have I Got News For You, Just A Minute, Sorry I Haven't A Clue, you know, I do the Radio 4 stuff, and then I started doing Radio 4 shows, like my own shows on there. But again, it was all that sort of, and I'd like Room 101, but then I stayed clear of all of the, well, not that there was like, what was the other ones at the time, They Think It's All Over, and Buzzcocks would be the only other panel shows. But I deliberately just did, I sort of just cherry-picked what I wanted to do. Lost my train of thought, but it was always that thing of everything I did, it was really only ever to feed the You know, just to sort of feed the stand up. It was.
And you know, presumably, when you were doing the shows that were building up your core audience, you were able to do them every 6 months, and people would come back to everyone because they knew it would always be different.
Yeah,
and you didn't have the fear that I think hangs over the head of 99% of comics is, Jesus, I've got to write another show.
Yeah.
So let's talk about how you put a show together and how that has changed from what you did when you first started out. Like, I mean, I think I read in an interview that you will, you know, the show for you will be four words on a bit of paper. Yeah. But I'd just like to sort of get under the skin of that.
That's become a thing now, but that's actually, it works the other way around, because now, 9 times out of 10, those four words on a piece of paper, I come off and write them down on a piece of paper, and like, people think, oh, his set list is just four words on a piece of paper. It's not. Yeah. I walk off stage and just go, oh, that was good. I was just saying, then I lose the bit of paper. How's it changed? What I used to do is I used to sit down and, like I say, when I first started, I used to sit down and write, like, jokes, but you know, I used to sit down and go, right, I'll spend ages, you know, just writing, you know, coming up with ideas, and then that would be, you know, I'd go on and I would sort of, you know, like, if, you know, if I was going to go up to Edinburgh, it would be that sort of thing of like, everyone's going, oh, have you written your Edinburgh show? And you're thinking, you're meant to write an Edinburgh show. I remember I did some gigs with Dylan Moran. I remember we were sharing a room. We were sort of in this, with two sort of single beds. I remember looking across, and he was sat on his bed, and he was like writing in a notebook. And I sat on my bed eating chicken wings. Yeah, I used to sort of spend a lot more time. I'd sit down and I'd come up with stuff and think, oh yeah, this is an interesting idea. I'll play around with that. But it was always things like, When I was doing the circuit, I spent a lot more time thinking about the sort of stuff that I wanted to talk about, purely because I was trying to avoid doing the same sort of stuff that everyone else was doing, you know, because I just found that sort of, so I would do things like there was, for a while, I would sort of, I went through a phase, like when the Spice Girls were at their height, I would sort of go, I'm only going to talk about the Spice Girls, right? So, which sort of really made me laugh, because it was the sort of thing where there was people that would see me, you know, if you're sort of going, hey, this is who I am, it turned up and they'd go, oh, is that, that's the bloke that just talks about the Spice Girls. That's just his act, is it? And then I went through a phase where I talk about, like, Jason and the Argonauts. You know, I deliberately just pick things that were sort of subjects that were either nobody was talking about, or subjects that rough crowds wouldn't be interested in.
Yeah,
just,
okay.
Just as a sort of a, you know, just as a deliberate...
Just a hurdle, really, like an obstacle for
you
to deal with.
Yeah, yeah, just to go like.
And I'm guessing from the context that you didn't go away and research Jason and the Argonauts. Like, you just
watch it and then. Yeah. And then I'd sort of do things like. What would I do? Oh, I'd talk about like. Things like. What was that thing about the. Someone was smuggling rare birds' eggs. And like somebody with a glass eyes, like taking their eyes out, and it was always like I've never been a fan of just sort of like, and that's why I hate the whole surreal thing, because like the idea of surreal is this sort of, you know, if you look at like surreal like artists, you know Dali or whatever, Enso, people like that, who are they're sort of surreal is devoid of logic. You can't see any sort of thought process. It's just something that is completely devoid of reality, you know. Whereas I sort of like it's all very well having a melting clock, but I want to know why the clock's melting.
Yeah,
and what
okay.
The story is behind it.
Yeah.
So
You're taking an assemblage of kind of random, potentially random things, and then making meaning with them.
Yeah, exactly. Rather than going the other way. Yeah, and just going, oh, look, this is... So I talk about, like... So essentially, in my head, I was talking about, you know, the smuggling of rare birds' eggs, and then... But then it would be sort of like, you know, finding somebody with glass eyes and putting the eggs in their face instead of the eyes and painting the eyes on, and then the heat from the brain incubating the eggs, and then just at the moment where the person's about to get away with a perfect crime, like owls flying out of their face and stuff. So instead of just going, whoa, owls flying out of the face, whoa, crazy, it, you know, that's what interested
me. It makes sense within an internal logic.
Yeah, creating a world, you know. And I would sort of... So I would sit down and think about these things and sort of go, oh, I'll create these. And then I would go on and I would sort of think, right, I've got the thing about the, you know, this part of the jigsaw. And then I sort of, and then as time went on, I realised that actually that it's better if the... the ingredients of the gag, if that starts 100% in reality, then when it starts to build, people don't go, it's not like a clunky gear change into the surreal. Because I always find that when you sort of see surreal comics, listen to me slagging off surreal comics, these bloody surreal comics is just, you know, but you know, if you go and see a surreal comic, that's terrible, because I love all that, but it's that thing of like somebody walks on and they go, you can either be an alien, like say somebody like Milton Jones, and I love Milton, I think he's brilliant, he's top class, but somebody like Milton, he's an alien on stage. He walks on stage and he's otherworldly and he lives in a and that's why when you see, like, say Milton, when you see him on a panel show, it's basically him doing one-liners that's a juxtaposition of what everyone else is doing.
Yeah.
As opposed to, say, someone like Merton, who is just an... Or Sean Locke, who, you know, I think Sean Locke, for me, is, you know, the reason he's so brilliant is because he's literally sitting there, you think, oh, he's just blowing a pub. And then all of a sudden, he just poof, and he comes out with something that makes everyone go. They don't go. Ooh, he's beating all crit. I'm not slagging off Milton at all.
No, but you're talking about the difference between styles. Yeah.
And the trouble is that everyone surreal just gets it's all lumped in one thing. It's like, well, surreal. Well, it's not. It's not. There's you could probably divide surreal comics into. You're probably 20 different types of, you know, you wouldn't say Milton Jones and you'd sort of say Milton was more of a one-liner merchant than you would say surreal. Do you know what I mean? It's that sort of, and but then somebody that does one-liners, the conceit that they are doing jokes, they are saying lines, allows them to break reality.
Yes.
You know, if Tim Vine goes, you know, I went into a shop the other day and I said to the bloke, you know he didn't. You know that's yes, it. You know yes. It's a line. You know, if Milton stands there and goes, you know, a man came up to me in the street, you know, my Auntie Marge or whatever it happens to be, you know that that's him doing a line and you go, this is a character, this is an alien character doing this, you know. I think Harry Hill's interesting because what Harry does is he plays with the idea of, is this bloke an alien or is this a bloke who's pretending to be an alien and the joke's on us?
I think the reason
Harry's such a genius is because the fact that he'll sort of, you know, he'll do it, my dad. And he'll do a joke, you know, he always said, fire with fire. One of the reasons, it's not the fire service. And then, you go, that's a line, and then the fact that he turns round to the audience and he'll go, not really, madam.
He's constantly sort of, flickering back and forth between those two.
And he's kind of just going, you know, almost looking at you like, you're an idiot. This is, I'm doing a joke, you know. And even things like when he goes, you learn the learning, don't you? Learn the line. It's almost like he's turning to the audience and he's saying, he's going, well, there's a joke. It's like, you're going, oh, you like my jokes, don't you? I could be reading too much into that. But it's that thing of going on and just going, ooh, what about these crazy, you know. Whereas sort of what I do is I'll go on and, you know, like there was a review of a show from the other week and they said, oh, he's every man, sort of describing like this, as an every man. You sort of go, well, that is true because ultimately I'm just a bloke talking about stuff. But when I walk on stage, I've got a massive set, right? I wear like the whole thing sort of like, I sort of play with the sort of contradictions of like, you know, at the start of my show, I come on, I have these enormous sets, like giant, you know, sort of almost Spinal Tap-esque,
yes,
ridiculous, huge inflatable set. And the one I've got at the moment's got all lights through it. And I've always like big build up and I have like kabuki curtains drop and music and I have a smoke machine and all the rest of it. I walk out and essentially go, right, and
then just start.
And it's that thing of like, here's a show, this is a show, you're watching a show, and it's like, da 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 da. Oh, no, it's not, it's just me, right, what's happening tonight then?
Yeah.
And there's that, so there's that thing of...
But you're starting in reality, you're mining the stuff from the audience so that you can connect things, but the basis is in reality, so people can tell that you're not just going, well, eggs, hamsters, owls.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. But along the way, you know, like last night, for example, there was doing all this stuff about, you know, like people sort of tweet after the show with like hashtags of things I've talked about. And I was doing this stuff last night, Crispy Elaine Page, right? Right? And it's one of those things where Crispy Elaine Page, how did I get to that? Oh yeah, that's right. So I was talking about the way Elaine Page prepares before the show, and I was doing all this stuff about how she, like when she was in Cats, and about how, you know, this giant scratching post that she used to have, and then I was talking about something about killing a bird or something, and then something about killing a bird, and then it got on to. Eating a cat, but then it turns out that the cat was Elaine Page in a costume from Cats, and then going into a takeaway, and then how that was a delicacy. Crispy Elaine Page, that was it. So anyway, so that was how the whole thing. But obviously, there's all these different strands, and it ended up with the idea that you would go into a shop and you would order a Crispy Elaine Page, right? Now that, by the time the show was finished last night, that made perfect sense. Like, I could have any character could walk into a shop and go, I'll have spread fried rice, Crispy Elaine Page. It could be, we've run out of Crispy Elaine Page. We've got Sweet and Sour Barbara Dixon.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
No, but it's one of those things where Sweet and Sour Barbara Dixon, that audience laugh just as much at that as they would as if I'd gone, you know, when you're in a garden centre and you buy it, because they that you've created that shorthand for them.
Yes.
And if I walked out at the start and went, imagine there was a broad prediction, it just doesn't...
We're watching you build it. It's like, that's the pleasure, is watching you construct a thing out of...
Yeah, yeah.
..the kind of mental Lego, and then going, look, and then starting the machine and go, there.
But it also allows me to... If I want to tell a story about something that's happened to me that day, you know, like something funny can happen to me, I think, all right, I'll talk about it on stage tonight. So I'll go on and... I know that thing, you know, I can take something which essentially isn't funny to something that's incredibly mundane, but then I can tell that story, and the fun for me is finding a way of sort of making that incredibly mundane thing fantastical. But equally, if I'm talking about something fantastical, I can take it the other way, and I can bring, you know, something that's out there, and I can bring that down and make that incredibly mundane and create a reality. So it's one of those things where it sort of allows me to... there was always a problem. The problem was, like, sometimes there was a sort of a period where there was this sort of clunky gear change of like, oh, hang on, what's he talking about now? Where it didn't quite, it sort of jarred a little bit, you know, the sort of, but what I do now is basically is I go on there and I just go, look, I could talk about anything tonight. I might tell you about, you know, whatever, you know, whatever's just happened. You know, I might tell you about trying to steal a toy duck from a hotel for my daughter, or I might tell you about how I think that, you know, I might see something on the news and it might be something like, you know, it could be sort of like an incredibly serious, you know, it could be like an incredibly sort of serious topic. But I think, right, how do I then, you know, I can take that and I can make that whimsical, mm-hmm. or I can talk about something whimsical and you see what I mean?
Yeah.
So it gives me, that's sort of what I was saying before about, you know, what people expect. It sort of allows me the freedom to sort of, if I go on, if there's one night, if I see something on the news and I think, I want to talk about this, I want to, you know, if there's like a really serious issue, you know, like I was talking about that, you know, that footballer the other week there, you know, and Judy Finnegan and you know, it's one of those things where something like that where, you know, there's this sort of, you know, sort of something which is quite a tricky subject, I can kind of play around with that because people aren't going, oh, well, what's he going to say about what's he going to say about the UKIPs, you know, or whatever it happens to be. I can just sort of throw it, and people don't go, whoa, he's making a point here. This guy is Ross.
So this is Ross. Before we move on with this, the second part, obviously there is a first part of this conversation out there. I'm sure you've realised by now we often start abruptly in the middle of things, but not necessarily quite that much. So you can download that, of course, with all the other episodes from comedianscomedian.com. Now, a couple of plugs before we continue. Stand-up Mark Burrows has compiled a book based on his experiences as a moderator of the Guardian online comments section. It's very amusingly called I Think I Can See Where You're Going Wrong. And that's available from Amazon in all conceivable formats.
Hey, marketers, advertisers, and business owners. Find yourself chatting up the same audience in the same places, using the same old lines? Maybe it's time to podcast the net further to catch your next customer. With Acast, there's plenty of fish in the sea with more than 100,000 podcasts and millions of listeners. So there's a perfect match for every business. Use our ad platform to cast your net, then narrow down using targeting such as demographic, show categories, audience segments, and more. Find your match, then reel them in. Advertise on more than 100,000 podcasts with Acast. Head to go.acast.com/closer to get started.
So have a butcher's at that. I think it'll be a sort of excellent stocking filler type thing. And with Christmas just around the corner, go for that. I should stress that is not a paid endorsement. Mark's a friend of mine and I greatly enjoy his comedy. So I'm just happy to quickly blurb that for him. So have a look at that. Listeners in Dublin, another plug here. I'm interviewing comic TV sketch star of The Savage Eye, now movie actor, and yes, former street performer, Dave McSavage, in the GMB in Trinity College on the 3rd of December at 6 p.m. as part of the Trinity Fringe. Tweet me at ComComPod for info if you're in Dublin and you'd like to come along to that. I think it's technically a student event, but there might be a way to sneak you in if you're desperate. There's probably some sort of wall that we can dig a hole under or get you through a little curtain or something. Tweet me at ComComPod for information on that, and it'll be great. I can't wait. Dave McSavage is one of those. I mean, he was a huge love of mine. His act was fantastic. He was a love of mine. His act was fantastically inspiring to me as a young streetie back in the, I suppose, late 90s at the Edinburgh Festival. And he was one of the most riotously provocative, exciting and really funny and fresh street shows I ever saw. He seemed to be in a, well, as I mentioned to Ross earlier on, he seemed to be in a genre all his own. So that'll be a very exciting conversation and I think a really fun interview. That's Wednesday, the 3rd of December at 6 p.m. Thank you for your donations, as ever. You can still donate at comedianscomedian.com by clicking on the PayPal donate button, which
is not that hard to find. I've had another look, and it's fairly obvious. But now you can also donate via Patreon. At the behest of several listener suggestions, I've now signed up to the Patreon system. That's patreon.com. You can pledge a micropayment that goes out to a creator on a regular basis. In my case, every time a podcast comes out. There's a whole community there of people that want to support other people making stuff. So if you're not a fan of PayPal, then drop into patreon.com/comcompod. You can set up a regular payment to me, or you can have a nose around and give me some feedback on how you think my page is looking and whether or not I've wildly misunderstood the mechanics of the system. If not, then please feel free to donate and continue donating on PayPal. Many thanks to you, those of you that have done that already. A pound a show or a one-off donation of 10, 20, 30 quid would be very kind, and it would help me make the show bigger, better, longer, and indeed more intimate. I've written in my notes after the word intimate, I've written woo. I regret writing woo. There's no need to spice up the word intimate with a woo. It's a perfectly good word on its own. Coming up next week, a very exciting conversation with Louisa Omulan, who many of you will know has shot to success over the last couple of years with her show What Would Beyoncé Do? She's found a niche among stand-up audiences that no one has really been aiming at, and she is absolutely nailing it. It's a really invigorating, very funny show. And I also have a really interesting conversation with her about some of the ways in which her show differs from the model of usual stand-up, and she's got some great answers along those lines. So I'm really looking forward to that one. That's next week. Coming up after that, of course, it's issue 100 with the marvellous Phil Kay, and then we'll have Omid Jalili, who I'm interviewing tonight as part of the Chortle Book Festival. I'm recording that for the podcast as well, and so that's going to be episode 101. We'll probably have to get Dave McSavage in there somewhere as well. Listen, leave the admin to me. I'm on it. I'm nearly on it. I'm not really on it. But that's all for now. Let's get back to the brilliant Ross Noble.
Will Chris B. Elaine Page feature in any of the rest of this tour? Will you? No. Like, well, definitely.
It might. Yeah. I doubt it, but...
Because, and you doubt it because in order to get to it, you'd need to follow the same steps, and that would feel, you'd need to contrive it.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a little bit, it's a little bit tricky to get back to that. No, but for example, what would happen, let's think, what would be something that, so how it'll work now is I go on there, I just start doing my thing. And if something came up, say a Crispy Lane Page, right? Say that tickled me as an idea. The idea of, how would it work? Right, say the idea of, like tonight, for example. Now you've said that, so tonight.
Sorry, everyone, tonight.
Just thinking about the game. No, but for example, now... The idea, so that we arrived at that after probably 20 minutes of getting to something. But the idea of there being a mishap, you know, with a cat, and it turns out it's
Elaine Page in costume. Yeah.
So, like tonight, I might go. I might go on tonight and think, right, I'm gonna talk about the fact that Elaine Page is really annoyed because she's constantly being experimented on by, you know, vivisectionists or whatever. So it's one of those things where, like, I might start, like, you know, I could walk on tonight and think, all right, I'm going to talk about cat mishaps. But
yes.
But what could quite easily happen is I could go on, and that's my intention, because yes. I think, oh, well, that Crispy Lane Page, that's a funny idea. But 9 times out of 10, I forget about that. So it's okay. Just something else happens.
And you'll walk on and you'll see a doth in the front row or whatever the
exactly,
thing is. And
exactly.
And it's somewhere
just,
else.
And it, you know, and I might, you know, and then I'll think to myself, oh yeah, that was the, but I might end up, you know, I might end up talking about cats, but I talk about a different, not necessarily the thing that I intended to talk about. It could, that could lead me off, you know, and then say, like, you know, and then tomorrow night, the thing that I come up with tonight could become, you know, that could then send me off in another. So,
going, and I'm sorry, I'm just mindful of time. This is exactly what I wanted to get to. We've got to wrap up. But you're not going on tonight with any subject headings or any ideas or any particular stories, or are you?
Well, I can, hang on, let me think. But it just depends, because I've just had 10 days off, so because it was half term.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so, like, you know, trying to... No, like,
I've got to go on and remember all the stuff that I don't normally need to remember because
I sort of, you know, you sort of get into that. What would be
like? Would you have an end point for tonight? Does the show have a closing story that do?
I'm trying to think what I've been talking about of late. No, I mean, like last night, for example, the. Oh God! It's, I sort of what would I be talking about? No, what I would do is I would have, like, say something. I'm really trying to think about what the say something funny happens to me. Say there's an anecdote, and I think, all right, that's that's a funny story. I'll tell that. My intention isn't to go, I'm going to tell this story. And here's the thing, right? You know how you sort of, you get a thing and you sort of hone it.
Yeah.
And it sort of, the idea, the sort of the obvious way of going about something is to take something and sort of hone it down until it's perfect.
Yes.
Well, I try and do it the other way around.
Okay.
I try, 9 times out of 10, I'll improvise something and it'll fall out perfect. That sounds up me or not.
Oh, but I know what you mean, yeah.
But there's something about being in the moment where you'll go, oh, here's a thing, and something which you didn't necessarily even think at the time was hilarious. You think, oh, this is a funny thing, this might lead to something, and it just goes bluff, and it just falls out
it's almost like in joke form. It just goes,
yes, it just falls out. You know, the rhythm of it's right. You sort of, all the elements of the story, it just go boom like that, and it just goes nuts. And it's one of those things where the rather than taking coming up with a thing and going, right, how can I get this honed into a thing.
Yeah.
So what often happens is I'll say something will fall out fully formed and go boom, and then I'll think, oh, I'll do that tomorrow. So I'll go on, but it's never as good.
Yes.
So,
okay.
So what'll happen is it'll be like, so I'll then go, right, well, that's sort of, so there's part of you that just thinks, well, there's something there. And so I'll kind of like play, so I'll do that story again, but it's not necessary, but I'm not going, I've got to recreate that, or I've necessarily got to either recreate it, or I've got to sort of fashion this into a thing. I'll just kind of go, well, that's something, and then let it go off. Do you see what I mean? And then, so what I'll do is, I'll kind of,
you'll start with almost, rather than starting with an idea and ending up with a joke, you'll start with a joke and end up with an idea.
Yes. Is that
yeah, sort of. I think sort of. But you'll get that, if it, like, to use a painting analogy, you'll start with a photo and then just kind of go outwards from it.
Yeah.
Rather than,
yeah.
Oh, that's a terrible analogy.
It's sort of. Yeah. But it kind of, but then also, you sort of like smash things together, you know, just sort of go like, oh, there's a, what I think what I'm trying to say is, rather than, to me, this is the way I look at it, to me, as soon as the show feels like it's, like, I'm not a big believer in, you know, some people, what they do is, they'll either write a show or they'll come up with a show and they'll get it and go, this is the show, and they'll do the best version of that show. Whereas, and this isn't for everyone, this is just the way that I like to work, is I like to just sort of have the... As soon as it feels like... If I come up with an idea and I go, that's an idea, that works, or that's a banker. If I feel like I'm going on the next night and going, I'm going to do that thing word for word, the next step on from that is you come up with something that night and you do that word for word and you bolt it on, and then you bolt the next thing on, and then all that happens is then you're working towards building a, you're sort of working towards building a, not a perfect show, but you're working towards building a thing which is, you know, by just bolting more and more bits on. In a way, you're building a show, but that's, to me, that's not how I like to work. That's how I've tried to do it in the past, you know, but what's better is, you know what it's like? You know Minority Report? The thing in Minority Report where it's just, and he's got this sort of...
He's like, moving all the images around, like a touch screen around, sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, and it's sort of, as soon as you start of, because then it's that thing of like, those sort of ideas, they become like sort of bankers. They become that thing of like, you get into that thing of going, oh, I'm sort of, I'm in the moment, I'm enjoying myself here, now I'm going to do that thing. But if you kind of go, oh, there was that idea, I'll have a bit of that, and then, you know, that could, you know, so it's not, because otherwise, and that's not to say that building a show isn't a good thing, because that's, you know.
That's what 99% of people are doing.
Yeah, but I think it's one of those things where it's sort of like, it's more about having this sort of, this sort of fluid thing where it becomes, because as soon as you start getting, I think as soon as you start getting attached to ideas and you go, I found the thing. Yeah. I'm going to do that thing. Well, it's one of those things where there's 10 other ideas that are far better than that thing that you're just holding on to. So, you know, if I come up with a, you know, if something happens to me in the afternoon and I go, oh, that's a funny thing, and I go on stage and I tell that story, I think, all right, that's good, and it works. You know, that might, you know, it might take me 10 minutes to tell the story. I might go on the next night, and I might, you know, I might just sort of throw it away, but it's the stepping stone to something else, and then that becomes the, you know, and I might take, you know, so it's just this sort of, otherwise it just feels too, it's probably just the way that, like, if stuff becomes too slick and too, it become, they become like sort of, almost like a safety blanket. And
if you've got a safety blanket, then you use it. And as a result, you don't have the exciting experience you would have.
Yeah, but that's not to say that's not a bad thing, but I just think it's one of those things where, you know, if I tell a story and it becomes a, you know, if I go on and I think, right, that's a funny story, you know, I might go on the next night and think, right, I'm going to tell that story again, but I'm not going to try and recreate how it was. I'm going to use that as a, you know, I'll sort of tear it apart and see where it'll go. Yeah. So it never becomes like a, does this make sense? Like it's sort of like a. It goes that way rather than that way.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know. And then
for the benefit of the listener, Ross just moved his arms outwards and then back inwards.
Yeah. So. Yeah.
You've got to go, and I'm aware of keeping you from your sound check.
Yeah,
Last question, you'll know from the show, I like to wrong foot people by asking if they're happy. You seem pretty happy. What I'd like to ask you is, are you talented?
Oh, good Lord. Well, yes, because either that or I'm fucking lucky. Well, here's the thing. When people slag me off and they go, oh, it's just, what is that? It's just, and you know, it's a bit like, I was just about to compare myself to Mark Zuckerberg there. You know, in Social Network where he goes, you didn't, you know.
If you'd have created Facebook,
if you'd have created, you know, and when, you know, I've heard, you know, secondhand from mates, you know, people say, oh, I've been in a dressing room and, you know, such and such a comic was slagging you off and just going, well, yeah, well, you know, what is that? It's just bollocks, it's this, that and the other and all the rest of it. And I just think, all right, then you do it. So, you know, but to answer, like, you know, to, on the, you know, on the happiness front, yeah, as far as I'm concerned, like, I'm, like, I've just, like, I've won, do you know what I mean?
You
like,
have, it, man.
It's, you know what I mean? It's one of those things where, like, you know, and I know this is tricky, but there's honestly, there isn't another, and this might just sound like incredible arrogance, but there isn't another comic that I would swap with, like, at all. Like, it's one of those things where I've found my audience, you know, I do exactly the show that I would want to see. I haven't got to compromise it, like, at all. Like, it's, you know, it's the, I play the venues that I want to play, and then whenever I want to do something that's, you know, whenever I want to sort of play with something else, if I, you know, if I want to try, you know, if I want to do, like, a film, or I want to write something, or I want to, you know, whatever it is, I get to do that. But, you know, without, you know, I mean, I wouldn't mind a part in Star Wars, but, you know, it's one of those things where, like, anything I want to do, I sort of get to, I don't have, some people are, in fact, it was Penn from Penn and Teller was talking about, it's about the show, not the venue. There's some people who, you know, there was this interview with him and he was talking about the fact that some people just want to have a sitcom. Some people want to be a movie star. Some people just want to, you know, it's all about, they want a theatre with their name on it. And it's all about that rather than what they're actually doing. And I think if you can, you know, and this is, you know, if anyone's listening to this who's like, you know, doing the open spot thing, and you know, if you're the sort of person who watches a load of people on telly, you know, watches all these sort of, like, you know, mainstream comics who've got their own show, that, you know, that whatever it is that you sort of aspire to that thing, then, you know, arguably if you work hard enough, you'll get that. But that's not necessary. The things that you think are important aren't important at all. You know, the thing that's important is being able to, it's basically to do stuff that's fun, you know, and loads of money's handy as well. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, but that's the, but, you know, like, from my point of view, like, I've got exactly the career, I've got everything that I could want, you know, and if I want to spend time with my family, I've got enough control of my career that I can go, right, I'm just going to take a couple of months off and just do that, or, you know, if I want to go off and travel, or, you know.
You don't even have to spend time writing jokes.
Well, you know.
You never have to look at a blank white page.
But the thing is, though, is that but nobody does. That's the thing. Like, it's one of those things where it's only, you know, the way that I work is only, what's the best way to put it? The way that I work is only, it's more obvious. Like, it, you know, because I sort of show my working out, it's more obvious that that's the, you know, the way that I'm working. That's the, it's just more obvious. But for, I mean, fair enough, if you're a one-liner comic, you do have to sit down and write one-liners. But I would argue, you don't need to be sort of stream of consciousness in order to play it on stage. Do you know what I mean? You can still do that within, even if it's, you know, like, if you're talking about, you know, if you're talking about real things that have happened in your life, personal things, I think it was Bill Hicks that just said, jokes are just things you do while you're busy being funny.
Mm.
And I think that can be applied to, doesn't matter what sort of comic you are, you can still, you know, you can still employ that vibe. Do you know what I mean? Mm. If you just go on and be fun,
I totally get it. In fact, the only downside of that I can think of is that you won't necessarily create a joke or a thing that will outlast you. Does that occur to you that, like, you could, you know, we can name a Bill Hicks joke, you can name a George Carlin joke, or a, you know, that after these guys have died, they've left behind a, you know, a joke that can be referred to and admired and repeated?
Yeah, that's what DVDs are for. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, it's like in terms of your bits,
yeah,
like people regard you, people refer to you, I think, as Ross is this thing, not Ross has created this thing that. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I can't really name one of your bits because you don't work in bits.
Well, no, that you're right, but yeah, let's walk down the street and we'll see how long it takes for somebody to shout meat flaps at me. yeah, it's like, you know, I did this thing about muffins and, you know, several times I've been in cafes where I've ordered a muffin and it's arrived and somebody's put a face on it because of a thing, you know. So, yeah, but no, you'd be surprised. It's the weird things that... I know what you mean. Like, in terms of... Yeah, 100%. Like, there's not a... someone like Bill Hicks, yeah, you call it... That was in a book of quotations.
Sure.
But, you know, there is, have you seen that comedy carpet in Blackpool?
Yeah.
You know, so there's all these, like, you know, and mine just says next muffin, you know? So it's just, yeah, there's, to be honest, you put anything on a DVD, and, I mean, from the last DVD, the Sweet Sweet Piggy Titties, you know? It's one of the things where that's now become a, you know, so actually, weirdly, I think what happens, especially with comedy fans, is they just pick up on stuff that you don't necessarily think
of. You don't get to control your legacy, do you?
Exactly. And in a way, it's sort of, people just pick stuff out and that becomes, so, you know, chances are it'll be one of those things where, you know, for all I'm banging on about, you know, just... You know, not being, you know, oh, I'm not this and all the rest of it. It'll probably be, you know, on chore, it'll say, you know, Piggy Titty's jokester dies. It'll be like that.
A so, nation born.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I don't know. So, but I should probably go and eat some chicken.
Thanks, Ross.
No, it's been a pleasure.
So thank you very much to Ross for coming along. I really, really enjoyed that. We could have talked for hours and hours and hours. I know many of you made jokes to that effect when the first episode came out about just exactly how long you expected Ross to speak for. But there's so much we didn't even get started on there. So we're both, Ross and I, are both looking forward to part two or three. Would it be two? This is two parts. Part two... Part 1B, this system doesn't work. But we're looking forward to talking more. This episode was co-produced by Nathan Wood. Olivia Phipps, was in charge of the podmin. Have a look at Patreon. That's a great way to support not just this show, but plenty of other exciting endeavours from all over the world. Lots of great stuff on patreon.com. And you can check my one out at /comcompod. And a little shout out now. Are you listening to this in India? I've got half an eye on a new... I love the idea that some of you might have just looked out the window and thought... I mean, I don't think so. I've got half an eye on a new project which might have something to do with the recent explosion of stand-up comedy in India. So if you're a stand-up fan or an act based in India, drop me a line, info@comedianscomedian.com. I've got a couple of questions for you. Exciting. That's all for now. Speak to you next week with Louisa Omulan. Bye for now.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers, with rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.